is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 718. I am Nicole Shiro, and today I'm here with guest co-host Amber Quick.
Hello.
And guest engineer Tracy Schultz.
Hello.
And you're listening to KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby and KOOP.org. Each week we take a look at theater from many angles, and if it's theater, it is on Offstage and On the Air.
The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
I'm independently owned and operated. The only thing around here that's incorporated. I do it all and it's fine by me. I'm a one-woman whiskey dynasty. I'm independently owned and liberated.
Oh, we are all dancing here in studio to a little bit of Alex Neal from Shuck, but we'll get into this song and why we're playing it. I want to start here with everyone and say it's Wednesday, May 3rd, 2023, and today on the show we're going to have The Vortex with Mala Malas. Is that correct? I didn't ask you guys.
That's correct.
Oh, yay! Mala Malas with Beltane. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to have Texas Performing Arts Broadway in Austin, a little snippet of an interview with Melanie Moore for To Kill a Mockingbird. But of course, we're going to have lively discussions, including the news and views of the world of theater in Austin, New York, and beyond. So stay with us.
This corn ain't gonna shuck itself. There might be someone that I ain't met yet. And no disrespect to Miss Tammy Wynette.
No disrespect, Mrs. Tammy
That's
Wynette,
right. Don't
and
you
I'm
dare.
Sorry, but if I was Tammy Wynette and Alex was singing to me, I would not be disrespected.
No.
But before we get into that, I just want to say thank you to Kim Simpson for another incredible international folk bazaar.
Yeah,
Kim
very
Simpson
cool.
rocks, and I also want to give a thanks to the two of you for coming in here to play with me today while Lisa is out. So thank you, Amber. Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you.
And so happy to be here.
There's a lot. We're going to get into a lot. So that song was from Shucked, the new Korn musical
yes.
that I can't get enough of, that had 9 Tony nominations, Woo. Which we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But that actual song was called Independently Owned and sung by one Alex Newell. Tony nominated Alex Newell. I should start with that.
Incredible.
So, all of our music today, minus one song, will be from all of the best new musical. I did not pull from the revival. I am sorry, Grobes. I love you, but you are not on air today. I know.
Today was your chance.
And
this
today
could have been an all Grobes show.
Lisa's not here. It could have been all Grobes all the time. And I didn't go hog wild. This is
huge restraint for
huge
you, Nicole.
Restraint for me. That huge restraint
great.
For
I'm
me.
I'm proud. Yeah.
So let's get into it. And I'll talk about theater, but I want to introduce our other two folks here, the disembodied voices that you hear that are going to be our guests here on The Vortex. But Blaise Ryson?
Yes, that's correct.
Hello. And Agatha Christie?
Yes.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
So let's talk about the Tony nominations.
Yes.
Okay, Some Like It Hot, sweeping it up. What was it, 14?
13 or 14.
Like,
wow.
And then Shut. The Korn musical with 9.
Yes.
9.
And Juliet, I believe, also had 9.
Well, see, those I knew and expected. I didn't think Some Like It Hot was going to get 14. I knew it was going to get a lot, but
sure.
I just didn't think, like, that would be the sweeper of all of them.
Yeah.
I knew Shucked was awesome, but I was like, would the world know it's awesome? But, like,
yeah.
The fact that they got as many. I mean, let's just
That's
face
incredible.
It. I haven't had a list of, like, I need to see all these shows in a long time. I've always yeah. had 2 or 3 shows constantly. I'm like, gotta see that.
Mm-hmm.
I have a long, growing, double-sided list. So, I mean, I was like bananas, but Some Like It Hot, 13. Says it right here in the article. Look at that when you read. And then Ain't No Mo and Leopoldstad tied for the most nominated play with 6 nods, which is a lot for a play.
Absolutely.
Plays don't normally get like as many like that. So best play, Ain't No Mo, Between Riverside and Crazy, Cost of Living, Fat Ham, and Leopoldstadt. And I have problems pronouncing things. But Best Musical, which we'll hear from today, Anne Juliet, Kimberly Akimbo, New York, New York, Shocked, and Some Like It Hot. That is a very eclectic group of musicals.
It's kind of a crazy list.
It really is a crazy list, but you want to know what to me. At first, I'm like, that's just odd. And then there's a lot of that in a lot of these categories. I'm like, you poor thing, you don't stand a chance. Or that's just odd. But do you know what it says to me? There's something for everyone right now.
Yes. Absolutely.
And there's something everyone is connecting to. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen that in a while. It's normally all like one type of genre or one type of, I mean, we've got some like deep, deep, heavy content. And then we've got some like, we're shocked. We're singing about corn.
That's right. That's right. And to see it being acknowledged, you know, up next to these huge revivals with these decades and decades of history.
Oh, yeah. Here's the revival of a musical. Into the category for best revival of musical, Into the Woods, Camelot, Parade, and Sweeney Todd.
Yes.
Yeah, that's where one, I was like, Camelot, you don't stand a chance. I'm sorry. I felt bad for them to be up against Into the Woods. But some of these categories, performers, best revival of a play, The Piano Lesson, A Doll's House, The Sign in Sidney Brustein's Window, and Top Dog Underdog.
Amazing.
Again, and what another really eclectic group of works. But.
And shout out to Delphi Borch, who was an understudy in the Into the Woods revival and is now in the main company for Camelot. And
so
the year of her Broadway debut is now involved,
has been involved
with two productions that I'm just so proud of her.
Wow. So it was funny. I was talking about Camelot. I was like, Mom, do you want me to add that? Do you want to see it? She's like, I saw Richard Burton, Elizabeth Taylor, and Robert Goulet. No. I was like, You know what? I can't argue with you
I
on
feel
that
the
one
same
woman.
Way. I saw August Osage County with Estelle Parsons. And after that, I was
like, gotta leave it right there.
I will never watch the movie. I don't know that I'll ever see another production. It's done. I'm done.
Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm just so surprised. Let's talk about some of these best performance by an actor in a leading role in a play. And I am sorry if I mispronounce anyone's name here. Yaha Abdul-Mateen II for Top Dog Underdog. And shout out Susan Laurie Parks.
Yes.
Like, freaking love you. And she's a big history here in Texas. Corey Hawkins from Top Dog Underdog. Sean Hayes for Good Night Oscar.
Oh, I want to see that.
Me too. Stephen McKinley Henderson for Between Riverside and Crazy. And Wendell Pierce for Death of a Salesman. Another crazy group of people. And then, like, the leading roles for an actress, Jessica Chastain in A Doll's House, Jodie Comer in Prima Facie, Jessica Hecht in Summer 1976, and one Audra McDonald in Ohio State Murders. Like, hello.
Wow.
And then they do, this one blows my mind. Best performance by an actor in a leading role in a musical, Christian Borle, Some Like It Hot. Jay Harrison G, Some Like It Hot. Josh Groves, or as we call them, the Grobes. Sweeney Todd. Brian D'Arcy James, Into the Woods. Bed Platt Parade, and Colton Ryan, New York, New York. That's what I was like, poor Colton.
Was that Parade's only nom?
For best performance by an actor?
Uh-huh.
No, but we haven't gotten to actress, and we haven't gotten to other stuff.
Okay.
No, Michaela's not left out.
Okay, good.
Best performance by an actress in a leading role in a musical, Annalee Ashford in Sweeney Todd, Sarah Bud Ellis in Into the Woods, Victoria Clark, my queen, I love that woman, Kimberly Akimbo, Lorna Courtney for Anne Juliet, and Michaela Diamond in Parade.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, actor featured role, Jordan E. Cooper, Ain't No Mo, Samuel L. Jackson in The Piano Lesson, Brandon Urinowitz in Leopoldstadt, Arian Moaid in A Doll's House, and David Zayas in A Cost of Living. I mean, it's just, it's bananas. And we talked about Alex being nominated. Alex is in the category with Kevin Cahoon, Shocked, Justin Cooley, Kimberly Akimbo, Kevin De La Guila in Some Like It Hot, Jordan Donica in Camelot, and Alex Newell in Shocked. It's just like, Ruthie Ann Miles is up against Bonegan Milligan. It's just, I'm like, I feel like someone had one of those bingo ball things and was like spinning it and just had to pull the names out because they're like, I can't choose.
Where do you start?
What do you do? I don't know. This just goes on and on and on. But Life of Pi, I was surprised Life of Pi didn't get as many as they did. They did get 5 nominations. And they did get for costume because I was like, they need costume or technical. Have you seen the puppetry? Mm-hmm. Like, that's some banana stuff. So Some Like It Hot got 13, and the next level was three tied for 9 nominations. Mm-hmm. That was Anne Juliet, mm-hmm. New York, New York, mm-hmm. and Shucked.
Incredible.
I mean, that's just like such a wacky, different group of people. I don't know. And then next at 8 was Kimberly Akimbo and Sweeney Todd. And then we had a whole bunch at 6. Parade had 6
nominations. Good. Okay, good.
Along with Into the Woods, A Doll's House, Ain't No More, and Leopoldstad. And then Cost of Living, Fat Ham, Camelot, Life of Pi were all at 5. And then the rest were at like 4, 3, 2, and 1. Summer 1976 only got 1. Which was for the one actress that we just spoke of, and that's it. Which is interesting because it was so, like, the talk and the buzz, and we just talked about all of the nominations on that recently. So, I don't know. I could go down a rabbit hole on this forever, but I know we have a lot of stuff to talk about and guests and interviews and, like, little shows. But there was this really funny article in Playbill, and we'll book it on off, you know, we'll link it on offstageonair.com. But it was called Overlooked. Who was shut out of the 2023? There were 11 shows not nominated at all. 11.
Wow.
Some of them I'm not surprised by. Some of them I am. And they said, no, we're not counting the Jonas Brothers because that was a limited engagement finding. And I was like, this little cheeky writer here writing this article. So 1776, no nominations. Right. Remember, right?
Yes.
Bad Cinderella. I'm sorry, Andrew. I was not surprised by that. The Collaboration. Really surprised by that. Dancing. Nothing. The Kite Runner? Nothing. Mike Birbiglia, The Old Man in the Pool? Nothing. Birbiglia, thank you.
The Birbigs.
Peter Pan Goes Wrong? Nothing. Pictures from Home? Nothing. The Thanksgiving Play and Walking with Ghosts. And on top of it, the one I was surprised by, and then they wrote it here, in the most shocking admission, and I agreed, was from A Beautiful Noise, which is the Neil Diamond musical. Yeah. And I'm not surprised overall with it. But Will Swenson, or one Mr. Audrey McDonald, who plays Neil Diamond. First of all, Will's just...
incredible.
He's like King Midas. Anything he touches turns to gold kind of talent.
And Robin Herder in that one as well.
Yeah.
She's fantastic.
Did you get to see it?
I didn't, but I got to see her in Moulin Rouge when she played Mimi.
Yeah.
And I've been obsessed with her ever since.
I'm just surprised that by all that, I
would think that would be a crowd favorite in some ways. It's like they would get something just because of Neil Diamond. And everybody loves Neil Diamond.
Everyone hometown hero
around the world. What coming to America?
Exactly.
Today. Yeah. Y'all didn't give me my today, so I was looking for that we were all supposed to have our moment here.
Sorry. I didn't want to take your
today.
Thunder.
No. It's a group. It's like Sweet Caroline. We all got to do
I'm just trying to not let Cracklin' Rosie get in there, because that's my Neil Diamond.
Is that yours?
If I just think about it for the rest of the it's happening. I'm gonna do it to myself. Happening. It's happening.
You know what is mind-boggling to me is that Sweet Caroline, like, that's the anthem for most of the Premier League, and I'm like, where does England connect with Neil Diamond, the New Yorker, like,
on a spiritual level? Obviously, yes,
but it's that song and the Saints Go Marching In. I'm like, that's an American. Whatever. Y'all keep doing you and play your football. And like, I love the Premier League. I'm not like, but I just find that weird connection. Mm-hmm. But isn't that? And the other, Sharon D. Clarke, who got an Olivier for Death of a Salesman, didn't even get noticed here.
Wow.
Which is weird because Lisa and I always talk about how Death of a Salesman, everybody's always nominated in every revival. Mm-hmm. And wasn't a lot in this one. Hmm. I don't know.
Just Wendell. Was Wendell Pierce the only?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. And he was nominated, but he didn't win the Olivier when they over in England. So I don't know. It just, for the five plays nominated for best play, all originated off Broadway. How cool is that? And that's something that I constantly am trying to remind non-theater people, like, Off-Broadway and Broadway has nothing to do with talent. It is the size of the house.
Yep.
It is a numbers game on how many little heinies fit in seats. That's all it is. So I think that's fantastical. Anyway, there's a really funny Aaron Sorkin's take on Camelot. No one wanted to listen. But there's been a lot of like really funny, cheeky all the shows tweeting with each other, and we'll link this article, like the whole cast of Bad Cinderella like tweeted Peter Pan, another one, they're like, "What are you doing Sunday? Brunch?" Like they've all just been like taking it. Peter Pan Goes Wrong has had some really good social media. I'm like, whoever is doing this marketing and creative side, y'all are funny and you're on it, because that's making me giggle a bit.
Yeah, just use it. Yeah, like lean into it. Make the most
of it. You have to. I mean, you have to. Well, the big thing is a lot of stuff on Tony nominations breathe life into a lot of these shows and make people see and recognize and go to the theater on things they weren't going to. Sadly, and I'm really upset about this one because I was going to go, and there's just no way I'm going to make it up there in the next week to see it. But Bob Fosse's Dancing is closing. Oh, it's set a closing date. They had no noms, no love, no
it
nothing.
Breaks my heart.
Breaks my heart on another level. May 14th, it closes.
Wow.
I know, right? By the time of its closure, first of all, it's in the Music Box, which is a special little fabulous space to see stuff. It'll have played only 17 performances and 65 regular performances. My mom, she's devastated. We were gonna go. She's like, "Oh my god, the original," and da da da. And I mean, this is Fosse. Yeah. I don't know. This one really, I'm gonna start crying. This one has me upset. Like, has me really, really upset.
I've been obsessed with the trumpet solo since I was a child.
There's so many good. I mean, Jerry Jeff Walker's music is in this show. Wow. Mr. Bojangles. I mean, there are three numbers that they pulled from Dancing that are in Fosse, the Fosse musical, and there's some of the big ones. But I don't know. Swing is the one that everybody keeps talking about. But Swing is a great number.
It's so good.
I don't know. It makes me so sad.
Well, and you would think with the success of the show, Fosse Verdon.
You would think that would kind of spice up some
interest.
Wayne Cilantro, who worked with Fosse, like originally was in the original one, directed this. Like you have the Mecca teacher going, like,
yeah.
The only other person you're going to get better than Wayne is Anne Rankin, and she's not here to do that. Yeah. I don't know. It breaks my heart. Makes me sad.
Wow.
But I am going to get a little excited about something here right now. The shark is broken.
Ooh,
I have been following this forever. This is a play about the making of Jaws and when the shark broke.
Yes. Bruce.
The shark is broken. Now, I have a love for this because, you know, when I talk about the Jersey Shore and whoop, 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 the original Jersey Maneater was at the end of my block. This is where it all went down. This inspiration for a la Jaws. Like the little bull shark went in and ate the boy in the fresh water. Yeah, that was at the end of my block.
Oh, wow.
So I have been a child looking behind me like, is the Jersey Maneater going to eat me? Like for reals.
I did not know it was based on a true story.
So, you remember how the shark bubbled and went down, and there was a whole big thing in Martha's Vineyard, and it was a whole kerfuffle back in the day here.
Wow.
So, basically, Robert Shaw, who was in Jaws, his son wrote this play. I mean, it just gets better and better and better. And so when he first decided, and I first heard about this a few years ago, I'm like, this is brilliant, and it's either going to be really right or really wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But it still has legs. And it's going somewhere. The Shark is Broken is co-written and stars the son of the film star Robert Shaw. The guy's in it. He's not just writing. So it is coming to Broadway. It is going to be a fitting play for the Great White Shark on the Great White Way, is what they said. So he said it's a comedy mostly. We dip into serious elements, but our intention is to entertain, said Ian Shaw. He's going to play his father. And the guy has been in War Horse and Common and Much Ado About Nothing all in the West End. He's not like,
yeah,
my dad was in Jaws. I'm going to write a play.
I'm going to do a Broadway play,
so
Daddy.
The play, I'm Daddy. I'm going to go, I'm going to act. So it's a behind the scenes look at the three main actors in the movie. Robert Shaw is the shark hunter Quint. Roy Schneider is the police chief. And Richard Dreyfuss as the oceanographer.
Yes.
And it's the three actors had a really tense time. I don't know if you've ever read it. They were arguing. There was a frustrating. The shark was sinking. It was a lot of bad stuff. It was really difficult to shoot. But apparently a lot went on between Shaw and Dreyfuss. Wow. And it was very complicated because they were actually really good friends. But the animosity and the pressure of the sinking shark got to them all. So it did really well at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. It went to London. It got edited, re-edited. So this is all going to come back around. And I am so excited. It's co-written by Shaw and Joseph Nixon, based on the interviews and Shaw family stories. It was nominated for Best Comedy in the 2022 Olivier Awards.
Wow.
So it begins performances on my brother's birthday this summer, July 25th, and it'll be at the John Golden Theater under Guy Masterson's direction. And I'm just so excited about this on so many levels.
We need more monsters on Broadway. King Kong, John.
Listen. I went to New York with the purpose just to see King Kong, just to see the puppet, because the 100-ton animatronic puppet. The show itself was awful. And I knew it was going to be when I went in. But I can't still stop talking about that puppet that was one of the greatest moments of my entire life. I don't know where else the puppet goes. I don't know what else you do with that thing.
Right.
But yes, it's a moment. Really quickly, Actors Equity ratified the new touring agreement. They got that on there. Here Lies Love, another one that was off Broadway, moving to Broadway. Mm-hmm. They finally announced the cast. Yay. They announced the cast for Barry Manilow's Harmony, which is interesting. There's a whole bunch of other good stuff going out. And I'm going to just mention this, and we'll have this article online. The Phantom of the Opera closed. They loaded out the chandelier. And they did a whole pictorial. That's for you listeners. They did a cool pictorial watching this go out. I mean, it kind of made me sad. And the one last thing I'm going to talk about really quickly, because it's my jam, it's my place, it's where I do all my pre-show, after-show, any type of show, is the Glass House Tavern. It's a fabulous place in the city. Well, they're fighting. Mm. And they're right next door to Six. There's like 15 theaters on the blocks, but Six is one of the first shows to let out every night. And so now all the pedicabs have been hoarding in front of the Glass House Tavern, and they started harassing customers and people going in, and Glass House Tavern was like, yo, we totally get you're picking up these people, but like, can you stay at the sidewalk, this and that? They all banded together and started canceling them on social media and giving them really bad reviews to try to get Glass House Tavern. And Glass House is like, yo, people, please come and give us love and this and that. So there's this whole targeted dispute with pedicab drivers and the Glass House Tavern, and they're like, help us do this. So there's this whole big article that we'll post in on that. But Glass House Tavern, you've got me. You've had me, and I'll be back. So we're going to go out here and listen to a little bit of Anne Juliet. And I chose this song. I don't know if we should have freed her, but we're going to listen to her right now. This is a little Baby One More Time.
Yes.
Oh, baby, baby, how was I supposed to know?
And we're back.
We are back. We are back. We were all jamming. We are all jamming out personally, internally here in the studio.
Right.
Maybe you can feel the wave straight through the home, but we're going to talk to our first guest here. We are very, very lucky. We have the Vortex on with Malin Malice. Beltane. Ooh. It's all about the summer.
Yes.
So I'm going to reintroduce our guests again with Blaise Ryson and Agatha Christie.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. So tell us, what is this malice, Malin Beltane? What is the Nickel and Dime Tour? What would people expect? What is this all about?
Well, Malum Malice is based off witchcraft, paganism, and our concept is that we are a chantry of witches. We don't call ourselves a coven. We are a chantry instead.
I like chantry.
I do too.
There's just something delicious about
the word. Yeah, there's something more musical about the word chantry.
Exactly.
It's like chantry, coven.
Touche. You know, when you say it like that, it does have...
There's just a melody to
it. Yeah, there's a melody to it.
Yeah, and the idea is that our witches, we remove our clothing to cast our spells.
Yes. Oh, yes. So would this be an... What age would this show be?
This is an 18-plus show.
Okay, yes. So we're going to start off with that one right there. And so are you both... witches? Are you playing different? What are your roles? What do you do in the show? Please tell us a little bit each what you're doing. And
so we're kind of playing with the idea of what most people know as like a normal burlesque show.
Okay.
So a lot of people, when you go into a normal burlesque show, you have an MC. That's my job.
Excellent.
And the MCs, their job is to make sure the audience, you know, does what the audience is supposed to do and that the show is running smoothly and like anything going on backstage, like the audience shouldn't know about, the MC takes care of. And so we're kind of playing with that a little bit. So my specialty is I'm known as the Witch of Confirmation.
Oh,
so
I'd like to be that one.
My job is to make sure that the audience, or as we call them, our acolytes, because they're all trying to get into the chantry, I make sure that the acolytes are all behaving themselves.
Oh, she is our headmistress, essentially. Yes.
Okay.
And we don't do burlesque acts, we do rituals.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Fantastic. So yeah. And you know what? Let me ask, what are you doing in the show? So before I ask the next question.
So I am the director of the production. I'm also one of the dancers and the creator of the company itself.
That's fantastic.
Thank you. And so I will just be dancing in the show.
But you're in the show.
Yes.
And you're
yes.
directing the show, and you created the show. I mean, that's a lot of little hats to wear.
That is. That's the nature of burlesque. We all wear every hat.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So how many people are in the show?
We have a cast of 8.
Well, that's a good size cast.
Yeah. And then I know that we just celebrated Beltane on Monday. Right. And for the show to be Malum Malice Beltane, how did you craft the show itself around this holiday, this event, this new season that we've just entered?
Yeah, so Beltane itself is sort of innately sensual and very, very sexy. The idea is you go out and you...
A little wild.
A little That's wild.
Right. Yeah. You celebrate the pleasures in life, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's my life. Yes. I am in perpetual season of Beltane.
Love it. Everyone should be.
Yes, and listen, I'm okay with it. It's done me well for 50 years. We're just going to keep doing it.
Yes. And so what better way to do... a show that also celebrates sensuality, celebrates the human body, then linking it to Beltane. And for this, we kind of build stories for each show, an event that happens to the chantry or something they're getting up to. This show, we have made a mistake.
let's rephrase that. Oh. You have made a mistake.
The Witch of Scorned Lovers made a mistake.
And everyone else is paying the price and trying to clean up your mess. So like let's direct that back to where it's supposed
mistake,
to be.
Mistake, opportunity, growth. So we have, or my character rather, has summoned the Fae, and that was a bad idea.
Ooh.
We have all been possessed by the spirits of the Fae, and through our performances, we are trying to get out.
Yeah. Bargain, barter, whatever
bargain,
you want to do.
Barter, seduce, yes. Cry.
So there is a narrative through this entire piece, so people will feel resolution at the end, so to speak.
In a way.
Maybe.
Sometimes.
Depends on who you're rooting for and where you're going. Okay.
The Witch of Confirmation runs. Yeah. Basically, she tells our story.
Yeah.
So is the audience more involved? Is the audience pretty involved in this, or just through conversation? I mean, I guess you're breaking that fourth wall to talk to them.
Yeah. I never want my audience to feel like they are sitting down watching a show. Very nice. That's that's a really uncomfortable space that I have also been in. I love when an audience member will like throw something back at me or answer a question without having me to like wait to call on them. So it is more conversational. Mm-hmm. And I leave space in between rituals for that. But it is a very different show. Like there are some rituals that we do are very frightening and are very uncomfortable to watch. So we've also had to get used to the idea of our audience sometimes is just going to be quiet because they're stunned.
Mm-hmm. And processing.
Yeah, and processing.
Like, or a little scared.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So this is just 3 days, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's this weekend. Mm-hmm. So have you been rehearsing again? And like, how has that been going? And have you had like people in the audience to bounce off of? I know sometimes that's important in these invited dress when you're having to break the fourth wall and talk to people. Or are you just, you're just so good and such pros that you just go in it?
I don't want to toot my own horn.
But
one great thing about the Vortex and then the community that we come from is that a lot of people are very supportive and they want us to succeed. Yes. So they're there to play.
Excellent.
So it really, my job becomes really easy when I have an audience that like is warm and is like, and that's just thankfully what we've gotten every single time. And we have a lot of repeat audience members who had never seen a burlesque show before except for like a year ago. They came to see ours and they've been coming back. So they kind of know the deal.
And mm-hmm. What is this? Is this like the seventh year you've done this? Or what?
Oh, this no. is the seventh show.
Seventh show.
Okay. Yeah. Add seven in there.
That's right.
I was just trying to remember.
On Samhain, Halloween this year, we will celebrate 2 years of Malum Malice being at the Vortex.
Yes.
Wow. Congratulations. That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's really, really cool. So we're going to, audiences know and should expect a little bit of everything.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. A little bit of naughty, a little bit of sass, but it's 18 and over.
Yes.
Correct. So we just want to remind people that they go there. Anything else that they need to know or something new and exciting? I guess just come to have fun.
We are having a very special event for one of our Chantry members, and I'm not going to spoil it for anyone.
Oh.
There is a very large ritual that will happen during the show.
Yes. We've never had this ritual during our run. So this is going to be our first time doing it. And it's a highly honored ritual. So we're very excited.
Intriguing. If we go, we learn more. That's all we're getting from them. They're keeping that on there.
Find out the details. You have to show up.
Well, we're just about out of time. I'm so sorry because like I've had a really good time with all of you today.
Yes.
And this has been really, really exciting. I appreciate you both coming on today.
Yes, thank you for having
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having no, us. This is a blast.
No, thank you. It's been a lot of fun. We had Blaise Ryson and Agatha Tristie from Malum Malice and Beltane. Runs this weekend, May 4th through 6th at the Vortex. For more information, you may visit vortexrep.org. And you are all the one song I did not choose because I didn't have seven nominations. And there wasn't anything that really went with what you were doing. So I chose something a little off the wall and different.
Ooh, I'm excited.
Love it.
Happy birthday.
Hello, we're back. So that was, our guests are still here with us. They're playing. We're having a good time here.
Yes.
Having fun. That was Summertime. And that was sung by one Willie Nelson. I chose that because it was summer and summertime. It's Gershwin. And it was Willie's birthday this year. And he got inducted, and he's going to get inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And like that man is a legend.
90th birthday.
I want someone to put Willie and Dolly in a room so I can wrap them in bubble wrap, and they never go away. Because like that man is universal. Everybody loves him. It doesn't like it's there's true. Something mm-hmm. so and Dolly. Mm-hmm.
The lineup for the birthday party at the Hollywood Bowl over this past weekend was a who's who of everybody.
I know it was, but I'm really chapped about that.
But
the
dude's all a
Texan. Who cares? It was in L.A. The dude's a Texan.
I feel.
Why'd you take that away from me? Sorry, but I'm not. So
we'll see him again. He'll come back.
I don't know. Last time I went to the George Strait, Willie Nelson.
Oh yeah, it's
concert, like at the Moody Center, and yeah. That was the best I've seen him play in like 15 years. That I was like, I don't know if I want to take. It's another one of those. I think my Willie closed, and you know, I've met the man. I've done Willie things with Willie. Like, I don't think I'm.
You've had a Willie nice day.
I have a Poncho and Lefty film reel, and that's where I store all my smoky stuff. It just seemed very Willie, didn't it?
Absolutely.
So we're going to get off of Willie for a minute. But that's a great album. It's called Summertime. Willie Nelson sings Gershwin, and it's all Gershwin, and it's just so different, and incredible. It's beautiful. But let's talk about some local stuff playing. We have this weekend, we just got to speak with our guests, and Blaze and Agatha are both still here with us. We have Malamalis, The Vortex, playing this weekend through the 6th. We have Mother to the Maid by Jarrett Productions, and that is also playing this weekend through the 6th. We still have Indecent with Austin Playhouse, and they'll actually be guests on next week.
Oh, fantastic.
And that's playing through the 14th. I had to handwrite this in because I forgot they're also guests with us next week. But Katie Folger, who you may know from the whole indie film thing, is now doing a one-woman show called Getting in Bed with the Pizza Man. Mm-hmm. She decided very to exciting. Do theater in... Why not write a one-woman show? Of Let's course. Start off small. wow. But when Matrix Kilgore is directing that that's one. Right. So that's going to be over at the Crash Box. The musical comedy Murders of 1940 with City Theater runs through the 14th. The Last Cyclist with City Theater opens this weekend. We have that's one opening and closes the 21st. Another one opening this weekend is The Baker's Wife at the Alchemy Theater running through the 11th. And then still coming up this month, we have Spirits and Sprites with Diverse Dance Theater Troupe, Dance Theater at the Vortex, and that'll be playing the 18th through the 21st. Good old Sanctuary City at the Ground Floor Theater. Do you guys know that one?
I've heard of Ground
Lisa
Floor Theater.
Lisa may tell us about that. That's right. That opens on the 19th and runs through June 2nd. And at the very top of June, we got Big Fish with Austin Playhouse and Noises Off at Zach. So we've got some good stuff coming around the corner. Nice. Besides a few good options of things to see this weekend. And then I have Today in Theater History.
Today in theater history.
Oh my God, you sing it because I normally sing to Lisa when she does it. That just made me have it.
That's
what happened? Stuff happened. I lost my paper with the stuff. I knew it was Kiss of the Spider Woman. That I knew because it's, you know, Kander and Ebb, the greatest and longest composing American
show.
Broadway duo. So yeah, it really is like brilliant.
That was formative in my very young, very early career. I got to see a brilliant production of it.
I saw it on Broadway and right across the street was Lynn Redgrave's Shakespeare for My Father, which is the best play I have ever seen in my entire life. And probably the second best was Casa Valentina, but that's another story. But today is the birthday of Betty Comden. She is, you know,
shout out
you're
to Comden
not,
and Green.
Yeah, if you're not wondering, she composed a lot with Aldolf Green. She would be giving you the shows like, I don't know, On the Town, Wonderful Town, Peter Pan, On the 20th Century, Mrs. Primrose is a Nut, The Will Rogers Follies, Singing in the Rain, Bells Are Ringing. I mean, I don't know, we might know some of those ditties from those songs.
Happy birthday, Betty.
I know, right? Yes. Isn't that like 1917? Wow. That's a good 1956. Fred Lesser provides book, music, and lyrics for The Most Happy Fella.
Oh,
haven't thought about that one in a while.
That's a blast from the past.
Yeah, opening at the Imperial Theater, Joe Sullivan stars as pretty young waitress Rosabella, opposite of Robert Weed as Tony, and the aging Italian vineyard owner who falls in love with her from afar. The music, there's some really good music.
From Big D?
Yeah, there's some good music in that. So, they had that's right, I forgot Tom Jones did this. So 1960, if you could scrape 55 together, as producer Laura Noto may have called on you. He was trying to get a musical adaptation of Edmund Rosalyn to play La Romantique up and running, and tonight Tom Jones and Harvey Schmidt provide the book, lyrics, and score for the new musical The Fantastics.
Wow. Tom Jones?
Wow. Yeah.
I didn't know he worked on that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No relation of the 1900 comedy of that title, but it is one, and it starred, oh gosh, that's like Jerry Orbach.
Yeah.
Rita Gardner, Kenneth Nielsen, 42 years, follow, 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 follow. That's what they wrote in there. Nice little inside in there.
As a little aside, it's like Tom Jones is playing tonight here in Austin at ACL Live. I don't know if he'll do that song.
I love me Tom Jones. If you ever get road rage or you're stuck in traffic, put on Tom Jones. You cannot get angry listening to What's New Pussycat.
No, never.
Like, you can't. Like, you could be in the worst mood and you're like, I
fix it, Tom.
He is my go-to stuck in the traffic in the bridge or in LA driving. That is my go-to. Wow. That's a hint from Nicole. 1988, David Mamet, Speed the Plow, starring one. Remember this one? Madonna.
Oh, wow.
You guys, y'all never saw? Oh, yeah,
no.
I saw that.
No, I never saw that.
Yeah, I was in high school.
She was
in her Broadway debut. Joe Mantega and Ron Silver were both in the production, too.
Wow.
Yeah, right? Wow. Kiss of the Spider Woman, 1993. Mm-hmm. Kander Ebb, Terrence McNally. Oh, T-Mac. Mm-hmm. Miss you, too. Giving you a love you. My brother calls him T-Mac. He's too cool not to have a name, he said. I was like, you know what? You're right. And I got to tell T-Mac that, and he laughed. Let's see. Michael Cervais, I love him. Donna Murphy, David Patu, and more were in Love Music, the Kurt Veal, Alfred Uhry musical inspired by letters of Lottie Lenya and Wheel. And 2007, I miss that, and oh my gosh. But Iceman Cometh, 2012, with Nathan Lane. Crazy amount of stuff. But today's birthday is also Robert Cuccioli, Bobby Cannavale, Walter Sazek, Doug Henning. Wow. The magician, right?
Yeah. I guess it is. Performer.
Stanley Chase, Kevin Smott, Taylor Trench. Some good birthdays. Bon anniversaire. And I'm just going to give a shout out. I had a new nephew born this week. Bon anniversaire to you, little Riley Charles.
So
we're going to go out listening to a little bit of snippets from New York, New York, which is Kander and Ebb, the movie, revamped with one Lin-Manuel Miranda, because we don't have an Ebb anymore. He has gone to the other side. So it's with Kander and Lin-Manuel. And this is kind of a mashup, and it's not going to play where we want, but we're just going to listen to some of it. A little bit of song, a little bit of talking, a little bit of everything.
I love this city!
They're cheering for me.
That was a little New York, New York. I'm excited about that one. Mm-hmm. I love you that. I love that. We were talking about the story of New York, New York in the song. There's called Colored Lights. It's a book about Kander and Ebb, a great biography. If you want to learn more about that song and about Che Rivera telling them when Cabaret came back, you need more pineapples, like she was telling it them when it was. It's a really fascinating read if like you want to learn or read more. But
oh wow!
So we're gonna move in. This next interview is with Texas Performing Arts Broadway in Austin for To Kill a Mockingbird. Amber and Tracy and myself had the privilege of speaking earlier today with one Melanie Moore, who's playing Scout in the production. And this is kind of a collab between Offstage and On the Air and The Remix, which is Tracy's show, which airs same time, but tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow.
So it's 1 to 2 on Thursdays. So this was a pretty long interview, and it was really good.
I could have stayed on the
call with her
for another hour.
Forever. Melanie was fantastic. So we're gonna play part of this interview now, and then if you want to hear the rest of the interview, which I'm sure you probably do because it's that good, it's gonna air tomorrow between 1 and 2 on What's New with Tracy.
Yes, I'll start the show. It's like tomorrow at 1 p.m. It's like same place, same time. And I'll do the second half of the interview. It's like What You Don't Hear Today.
Excellent. Well, here's a little bit of our conversation from earlier today with Melanie Moore.
We get the real pleasure to be able to speak with Melanie Moore. She's going to be in our Fair City, like as part of To Kill a Mockingbird, which is going to be having performances shortly. How are you doing today, Miss Moore?
I'm doing well, thank you. I have to say, y'all all have such beautiful, like, radio voices. I feel like I could listen to y'all all day. It's gorgeous.
Oh, I love that. Well, you know, Melanie, you can always stream live at KOOP.org. You don't have to be in Austin.
Yes.
Great.
We're so excited to have you on, like, that Tracy and Amber and I get to talk to you. We've really, really been thrilled. And you've been in Texas now for 2 weeks. I think you're in San Antonio right now, and you were just in Houston. And now you're going to be coming to Austin before you go to Dallas. You got a lot of Texas time, but you are in Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird
by Aaron Sorkin, and OMG, how exciting. For people who have been living under a rock and don't know what To Kill a Mockingbird is, do you mind just giving us a teeny little nickel and dime tour?
Sure. I'll give you the, two nickel and dime tours. I'll give you the book by Harper Lee, To Kill a Mockingbird, is about sort of the experience of three children and their two siblings, Jim Finch and Scout Finch, and their best friend Dill, one summer in 1934, and the experiences of their sort of like childhood around a court trial and what happens in the town. And it's very much, her book is very much based off of the children's experience at the time. It's a huge sort of loss of innocence, first times for everything for the kids, and it's super magical. And I think that I'm from Georgia originally. I grew up reading and loving the book. I think anybody from the South is one of these characters, especially if the kids really resonate. So if you haven't read it, or you're living under a rock, go read the book. It's incredible. And if you're an adult and you haven't read it in some time, go read it. It's, so many things when I returned to the book, I was like, oh my gosh, how did I not get this when I was in eighth grade reading the book? I didn't, these things I didn't pick up on. And so that is what the book is about. And it's mainly this sort of lasting theme of the book that so many people take with them is it's these children's first experience with racism in the town of Macomb, Alabama, and how it ultimately shapes them and affects them and their loss of innocence. Aaron Sorkin has sort of turned that on its head and in a very beautiful way written a play that is based more about Atticus's loss of innocence and his sort of realization, which I think so many people had in 2020, which makes it so relevant today. You know, we were sitting there and we want to believe that we've come so far, which in a lot of ways we have as a country come so far in terms of racism and how we're moving forward and progress. But in a lot of ways, it's more insidious and we can't quite name it. And it looks very unfortunately similar to these stories that we are telling today in To Kill a Mockingbird from things that we're reading in the newspaper. Mm-hmm. And so Aaron Sorkin has turned it on its head. I play Scout Finch in the show, and I am able to play her as an 8-9-year-old, and I'm also able to play her as an adult, sort of looking back. So from the top of the show, I have questions about the events that surround this court trial of Tom Robinson, who is wrongfully accused of raping a white 19-year-old in the town. And I was told as a scout, I was told a sort of a narrative that something isn't adding up for me. So in order to answer questions in my present as an adult, we go back in time and relive all of these sort of beloved childhood stories, and also we relive the court trial and the events around it. And so it is, in a lot of ways, a loss of innocence. It's the loss of innocence about Scout's view of her father, but it's also really centering on this court trial and Atticus's loss of innocence in terms of thinking that he knew his neighbors, thinking that they had come so far, thinking that it was time for justice and for progress. And spoiler alert, it doesn't go well. And it doesn't go well.
Bummer.
Bummer. I can't tell you how many times I've been sitting out like at a bar afterwards and, with the cast, and we'll have people who have no idea that we were in the show because, we're all wigged and we look very different, and people are like, you can't be more than 20. And I'm like, yes, I am a 31-year-old woman. I do look slightly different than I do in a pair of overalls. And people will be like just very quietly having dinner with whoever they have like taken on a date to see the show. And, people will say like, man, I really thought he got off in the end. Or, like, I thought it was a happy ending. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all of us try and, like, scoot to the other end of the bar. Like, don't say anything. Like, it's, you know, it's,
yeah.
It can be really, you know, I think our memories of To Kill a Mockingbird, especially the movie, also, is like, oh, this parental father figure and these kids and this family that sort of, like, comes together. In reality, it is the, when you go and return to it, it's like, oh, this is so sad. And, you know, I think the nostalgia of the piece and the sort of humor that Harper Lee wrote, Aaron does such a great job of capturing that. But watching these characters that you love go through something that is so relevant today is really difficult, not only for us to play, but also for an audience. And they laugh and then they cry and then they sort of walk out and they're like, wait, what? Mm-hmm. You know, they there's a huge spectrum of emotions. We really hope people have that sort of cathartic release that great theater allows you to have.
Well, I was thinking about that myself because I haven't seen the movie. It's like, or I haven't seen the play, and I haven't seen the written. I haven't read the book. It's like in a few years. So I think, mm-hmm. like you said, it's like the memory of what we thought the story is about versus what the story is about. Mm-hmm. And was,
age does that to you, also, Tracy.
Yeah. It's been,
unfortunately, I've learned that lesson a lot lately. I'm like, oh no.
Well, it's like for yourself, what was that? It's like discovering things. It's like in the character of Scout. It's like from what you may have assumed was the character of Scout.
Well, I think that I grew up, you know, as I said, I'm from Georgia originally, so I really resonated from an early age. Like, I have a sister, but she's 3 years older than me, and so, you know, as the younger sister, I was not cool enough to play with, like, the other girls in the neighborhood, so I was definitely, like, playing with the boys, you know, and so I definitely resonated with that sort of, like, tomboy, like, trying to fit in, but you weren't quite, you know, able to fit in, and so that part of Scout, I do feel like I grew up that way, and that was incredible, but to be able to play that sort of my childhood self out on stage every night has been a joy. But I think that getting to play her as an older person and getting to play her as an adult and sort of looking back on the amount of privilege that she has was, again, something that I found extremely relevant to what we all had gone through as a community, as a country, as a planet, mm-hmm. in 2020 and beyond. And sort of saying, like, wow, I'm so privileged that I never understood that. I never saw that. I never witnessed that. And so many people that I know and I love and are a part of my community experience that sort of racism every day.
Okay, that was a really good conversation. See, like, she gave good conversation. She was awesome, and I love her. And yes, if you're wondering, that is Melanie Moore, the winner of So You Think You Can Dance, who's had a crazy career and is now in To Kill a Mockingbird. Thank you so much for your time. More of that interview will be on tomorrow on What's New between 1 and 2 here on KOOP.org. And if you want more information, that's Texas Performing Arts, Broadway in Austin, To Kill a Mockingbird, running May 9th through the 14th at Bass Concert Hall. For more information, you may visit BroadwayInAustin.com. We're just going to hear like 20 seconds of the other nominated. You Can't Have Me If You Don't Have Him from Some Like It Hot. It's a little bit of Christian Borle and J. Harrison G. J. Harrison G. Lisa and I have a legal ID with him. We had him in the studio and he was playing Lola in Kinky Boots. And Lola let me try on her kinky boots. Ooh. I have a picture with me having them on. Na-na-na-na-na.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I'm in my overalls. I feel very... Na-na-na-na-na. That's so mean. I hate it. I just hate. Hate is not a good word.
Back next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air, we're going to close out with the 6th nominated Best Musical, and we're going to go out with some Kimberly Akimbo, and I love Victoria Clark, but I didn't pick that song. Like, I didn't pick some of her songs. Sorry. I picked Great Adventure because I felt like today was a great adventure.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for having us.